Hey, it's Elle.
And M.
And you're listening to the Baby Project Podcast.
In this podcast, we will discuss our journeys as well as other warriors going through the ups and downs of infertility.
There's ups?
Yes, there's ups.
Okay. As a reminder, be kind to yourself and skip as needed. We know some topics may be triggering. Let's get talking.
This is episode 15, Live, Love, Laugh, and IVF. From the same province as us, Ontario, we welcome Noelle to the Baby Project podcast. Noelle is an elementary school principal who loves to camp and spend time at the lake. She also enjoys going for walks with her dog and her first IVF baby. You can also find her advocating anything and everything in the infertility world. Welcome to our podcast, Noelle.
Hi.
So I gotta ask, you also mentioned you like to dance at home and sing in the shower. What is your go-to jam when you're singing in the shower?
Honestly, anything that brings me back to like my 19-year-old days of like in the club, having a good time with my ladies, you know, those like tunes that you just come on and you're like, see you on the dance floor. Anything like that, I'm there for.
love it.
Yeah.
Mine seems to be Shallow, even though I don't know all the words, by Lady Gaga. It's just one of those like you can just screaming out
it.
Yeah, in the shower, no one's gonna hear you, you're off beat, that's okay.
I love it.
Oh, man.
I feel sorry for other people that are within your household that have to listen to you sing Shallow.
Hey, how do you know I'm like horrible? Okay, I'm pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or in the car or anywhere. Anyways, okay, so let's dive into some things. Let's start off with your love story. How did you meet your partner? How long have you been together?
So, Mark and I met, back in 2015, actually online. So I had just moved back to Sudbury, when I got the job as a principal and, starting the new career. I was kind of overwhelmed by everything, didn't really have a lot of time to like go out and meet people. I was originally from Sudbury, but I had been gone to Toronto for 5 years, so it felt like I knew nothing, knew no one, so I was kind of starting over from scratch. And turns out we actually went to high school together, and his brother and I are in the same group, like we're the same age, so we graduated at the same time. And he, my husband, played soccer with my brother, so we just had a lot of like ties that kind of just made sense. And we met, and honestly, like as cliche as it sounds, met and fell in love. We were engaged 6 months later and married a year after that, and everything just kind of is history, I guess, after that.
Wow, you guys clicked right away.
Yeah, it's weird when people say that you just know, but I did, like I just knew. It's kind of weird, but yeah.
No, I believe that. When you know, you know. I really do believe that.
Yeah. And now we're what? We just celebrated our 4th wedding anniversary. So we've been together 6 years, and we go through all the details of what we've been through. And it's like, wow, feels like a month, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry, not a month. Feels like 10 years. Not a month, 10 years.
Wow.
It definitely goes by fast. And,
yeah.
You know, there's nothing like, the joys of infertility to really test your relationship.
You said it. Oh yeah. And like, you know, when you say your vows and in your wedding dress and everything is la-di-da, and then there you are a couple months later, like, woo, here you go. You need to test for this. You're not making babies. Go for these appointments. This is what's wrong. So many things. And it tests so much out of both of us.
Yeah.
It tested us a lot, right? But we say we went through this, so we can go through anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I say the same thing. Yeah. Mm. Sickness and in health takes on a whole new meaning,
right?
Yeah. It's like, and it's so early on too in your marriage, right?
Yeah, so we actually started trying to grow our family, I guess, a couple months before our wedding. So I was having this like hope and dream of like announcing to everyone on a wedding night that, hey, we're pregnant, surprise. But that didn't work out, right? So that's when I tell people, like, when were you trying? And we were trying way ahead of our even wedding date. Mm-hmm. And we just kept going. But after like 6-7 months, I just told myself, I'm like, no, something's wrong. There's something happening. I didn't wait the year. Like everybody says, you have to wait. And the doctor told me I had to wait. And I'm like, yeah, it's been a year. Told my doctor it had been a year. I kind of lied, not going to lie, but I knew, right? I'm like, why would I go through another 4 or 5 months of trying and come back to tell you the same story? So I'm just like, tried a year, referred me, give me something.
Yeah.
So. Love it. Take charge of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't waste time, right?
I love that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My family doctor at the time actually put me on metformin. So I'm a plus size woman. So obviously the first thing that most doctors say to me is you have to lose weight, right? Or you should probably lose weight or anything like that. That they think that affects my fertility. So that doctor gave me metformin, which is a pill that's usually given to diabetics. Mm-hmm. And I have no sign of being diabetic whatsoever, but she just put me on that to try to help me lose weight, but it was awful. Mm-hmm. So I stopped that after like, I think it was a week after that I stopped taking that. And I had a girlfriend who was going to seeing a fertility clinic down in Toronto. So I asked her the name, went on their website and got papers to like self-refer. So I self-referred myself and I brought the page for the doctor to fill out to my doctor, but she had gone on maternity leave. So I was like, oh, well, looks like I need a new doctor. So wasted a couple more months there trying to find a new doctor who could refer me to this clinic in Toronto. Finally was able to do that. We get our appointment with the clinic down there. And what seems like, you know, oh, when we speak to the receptionist, they say, okay, we have an availability to meet you in 3 months. And you're like, oh my God, another 3 months of waiting. Yeah. And I just visualized this clock in front of me, like spinning out of control, like you're wasting all this time. And obviously we tried every month again to do it naturally. I guess I don't really like that term naturally, but to do it ourselves without assistance, I guess.
Yeah.
Didn't work. So then we get to our consultation and I was straight up with the doctor. I said, listen, I know you see me. I know I carry extra weight. Do you think my weight will damper our chances at reproducing? She like hesitated, but said, well, I mean, if you lost a couple pounds, it wouldn't be harmful, but it won't make the difference. So I was like, oh my God, she's actually not judging. I thought she was, you know, on my side. So then she had me do all the regular testing, the sonograms, those blood work, all those fun tests that we go through. Mm-hmm. And she sets us up for our first IUI. So I took letrozole, did our IUI, did the cycle monitoring. And one thing I should mention is that we're in Sudbury, that clinic's downtown Toronto. For those who don't really know on the map, so Sudbury is 4 hours north of Toronto, right?
Yeah.
So I'm starting a new job as a principal, just got married, driving, needing to take time off to drive to Toronto for appointments. I remember, you know, blood work being at like 8 a.m. So we drive down the night before, sleep there, do my blood work, drive back to Sudbury, be in town for the half day so I could work the afternoon of my day so I wouldn't waste all my sick days or my specialist days, stuff like that, right?
Whoa.
So that was a lot of juggling, a lot of juggling, a lot of mileage on the car, you know, a lot of stuff like that, a lot of expenses that we didn't think we'd have to have, especially after being married. We had just bought a house, all these little things, right? So the first IUI didn't work. We get to for a second at UI, and it ended up being close to the May long weekend. And I remember, I specifically remember driving down the Saturday morning. We were there for blood work and ultrasound. They measured the follicles. They called us like, hey, you need to come back tomorrow morning. Okay. Drive back that night. So we had gotten back the Saturday afternoon. We drove back Saturday night, went to Toronto on the Sunday morning. They're like, okay, you're probably going to have your insemination on the Monday. So keep your phone close by. We'll give you a call. So we're just kind of driving around. And then like, I don't know, I guess a couple hours went by and I'm like, what's happening? Like nobody's calling us back. Mm-hmm. And I tried calling them. We weren't getting callbacks. So I'm like, well, let's just start driving home. We're not going to wait around here for nothing, you know? Mm-hmm. So they call us again. As soon as we pull into the driveway, we get a phone call. Oh, well, looks like we missed your ovulation. And you can either choose to come back tomorrow for the insemination, or you can just choose to stay home. I'm like, what do you mean? Like you missed our ovulation? How does that, I was there Saturday. Like, what did you not see? You know, correct. What happened there? So I got really frustrated with that. And I just remember crying so much and being like, how do you miss this? You know, you put all your eggs in a basket and get all excited and so much planning, and then you get that news. So I think that was like our first big letdown, I guess. And I refer to the infertility journey as a roller coaster a lot on my, mm-hmm. on my page. And that was, I guess, the first big loop of the roller coaster that took us kind of off track and like, well, what do we do now? You know, you're faced with all these choices. So we ended up just saying like, we're not obviously going to go there. If you miss my ovulation, there's no point, right? Mm-hmm. So we healed from that loss, which I think is a loss, you know? And so I took a month off. So I did take June off because it was too hectic with my work schedule and I had too many things going on. So we took June off, restarted in July. And in July, I had asked her to switch my medication because letrozole was giving me like really bad headaches. And that's when I kind of started to focus a little bit more on the symptoms of all these medications. So I was like, is there anything else we can do? Could we try a different medication? Mm-hmm. She's like, no, this is what we're trying. This is what we're doing. So I said, okay, let's try that. So July rolls around, do the cycle monitoring again. It was a little bit easier because I was off work for the summer. Mm-hmm. So we did everything. We did the insemination, the 2-week wait. So the day before the, I guess, pregnancy test, and my husband got into a ATV accident. So he ended up rolling the ATV. Wasn't his fault or anything. It was just, you know, an accident. And he was airlifted to the hospital because we were at camp, which was 45 minutes away. So that was a really stressful thing. And I remember getting to the hospital, and because I drove behind him, I couldn't be in the helicopter with him. So I had to drive to the hospital. Yeah. And all I hear my husband yelling in the room, don't tell my wife I'm okay. Tell her I'm okay. Don't tell her anything. We're finding out if she's pregnant tomorrow. Aww. She can't be stressed. Oh, and she's, no. Someone's like, okay, get her a chair. So I just remember sitting on the outside of the waiting room for him, just hearing him say that and just like, okay, well, I'm worried about you right now. You know, like right now, I don't really care about this. Like you're my main priority, you know?
Aww.
So he left the hospital, like 40 something stitches on his foot. He cut his foot really, really badly. And the next morning, obviously by the time we came home, it was, I think 1 o'clock in the morning. So I'm like, let's just take a test. You know, like why wait till 5 o'clock in the morning? Let's just do it. And it was obviously negative. So that was a lot of things happening all in one time. Right. So kind of had to process that. And my husband ended up being hospitalized for 4 weeks after that, because he got an infection in his leg, almost lost his leg. It was really bad. So he had to have a whole skin graft done on his foot. They had to like rebuild, the plastic surgeon kind of rebuilt his whole foot for him. So he was hospitalized. And in the meanwhile, the clinic was asking me, well, do you want to do another IUI? Let's do another IUI. I'm like, whoa, yeah. no can do. My husband can't give his sperm because it's full of medication right now that, you know, mm-hmm. probably shouldn't be on. He's not mobile. He can't walk. He can't move. Mm-hmm. So we put that on hold. And then a new school year started. And I think by the time, so he didn't walk for a good, I think 40 something days. He took his first steps 40 something days after the accident happened. So it was a lot of caregiving, a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. being by his side and stuff. And, you know, your wedding vows again come out and you're like, okay, sickness and in health, here we go again.
Through thick and thin. Yeah.
So then I think it's around October. We're like, okay, let's give this a shot again. Maybe we can get one IUI in before Christmas. And then let's talk to her about IVF. So I had started kind of reading out about IVF on my own, just seeing, you know, what can I do? What do we need more? Why isn't this working? Mm-hmm. And I had emailed my nurse and told her, listen, before we do an IUI, let's talk to the doctor about IVF. And I just want a consultation. Like, what can we do? So we go see her before Christmas, and she comes into the room. She's like, okay, we're going to do this medication. We're going to do letrozole again. I've reviewed your ultrasounds. And if we look at your ovaries, you know, I kind of just, it's probably a PCOS that you have. I'm like, okay, well, first of all, we're not doing another IUI. And what is PCOS? She's like, well, it's probably just what you have and why you can't get pregnant. And she just kind of shrugged it off and left the room. And she's like, I'm going to go get the nurse so she can give you your medication and all that. And I'm like, whoa, well, no, we want to do IVF. We don't even want to do an IUI. Like, what's happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So the nurse went and got her again. And she's like, okay, no, they don't want to do another IUI. They want to do IVF. Can we help them? So the doctor came back and she's like, listen, your BMI is too high. We cannot help you. I can maybe try to refer you to a couple of doctors who can try to help you, but we can't help you here. With no explanation, with no, like, nothing, just completely dry answer. So that drive home was fun, filled with tears, right? Again, because you're like, oh my God, I have PCOS and I can't do IVF because of my weight. If I'm the problem, this is my fault. You just kind of start mm-hmm. sabotaging yourself, right? And I'm sure we've all done it. You just get in your head, and as much as, you know, your partner tells you no, it just kind of escalates out of control. So what didn't sit well with me was the fact that she said, well, it's probably PCOS. It wasn't a, this is PCOS, this is what you have. It was a probable thing. So I was kind of taken away at that answer and questioning, you know, what is that? And so I obviously Dr. Google mm-hmm. everything, and I have zero symptoms of PCOS. I'm like, how did she get this conclusion?
When they did totally your original, lost. When they did your original testing with you and your husband at the beginning, did they mention anything about the
nothing
PCOS?
Nothing, like zero. That word never came out except after our third IUI.
Yeah.
So I was really taken aback about that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had heard about PCOS, but I wasn't, like, you know, informed about it. So mm-hmm. obviously start reading everything online and you're like, oh my God, do I have this stuff? Do I, you know, questioning, am I lying to myself? Do I have this, you know?
Am I in denial?
Yeah. So the only thing that I did check off was the extra weight. So, you know, okay, so it's probably that's the culprit again. My BMI is the culprit of this. I can't get pregnant because of my weight. That's it, you know? But in the meanwhile, with all this happening, so so my hometown decided to open up a fertility clinic during this whole, like, car accident or ATV accident and third IUI thing. Mm-hmm. There were talks of opening up a fertility clinic in my hometown. And I had called them to set up a consultation in, like, September. And I didn't end up getting to talk to anybody till end of November anyways. And I was so excited about the hopes of, like, not having to travel anymore to see someone. The clinic is super close to my work, so I could have just you know, drove there for an appointment real quick and came back. Mm-hmm. And the sense of feeling normal was kind of coming to me and being like, oh my God, I'm normal. I can get help in my hometown. This is so great. You know, I don't need to go somewhere far to get help. And I remember just crying in the office to the doctor once we finally did have that consultation at that clinic. And the feedback I got was again, kind of nice and, oh no, your weight shouldn't matter. And, you know, we're kind of new at this. They were just starting up. They weren't doing IVF. They were doing IUIs, but they were doing IVF with an associated clinic in Toronto again. So I got no answers because it was the holidays from anyone. I think it was January 2nd. So the day after New Year's Day, I received a voicemail on my phone. For some reason, my phone didn't ring and I just got the voicemail of the clinic here in Sudbury. And they told me the message like was just clear and simple. We will not be able to help you because your BMI is too high. Good luck. Just that's it.
Oh, wow.
So another shutdown, right? Because of my BMI. So I was like, what is happening here? Like, I will never be a mom. Then you just kind of go into all these horrible, horrible negative thoughts that, you know, are not good. And I'm sure a lot of women who have gone through fertility, just, you know, like I was saying, we self-sabotage ourselves and we just get into this routine of saying, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault. And never actually getting help or reasons why it could be our fault or whatever, you know? So new year, new plan. My husband and I just decided, you know, screw the IUIs. We're done with those. They don't work. They're not working. I haven't met anyone who they've worked for. So let's just go to IVF. So the doctor at my original clinic down in Toronto had referred me to this specialist who she told me worked with women who had higher BMIs. So I was like, okay, do I need like that much of a special, you know, attention doctor? So we ended up getting a referral for her and we took a couple of months off again for my husband to do like more physical therapy for his foot because that was still ongoing, and just for myself too and for my body to just kind of, you know, relax, I guess, after everything that we had gone through. So then we got our consultation with this third clinic down in Toronto, Markham area, and I read reviews about the doctor before going, right? Mm-hmm. On like RateMyMD or RateMD.com, whatever. Oh my God. I went spiraling because the reviews were not the greatest. So I was like, she's going to tell me that I have to lose weight. She's going to tell me that she's not going to want to help me. She's going to just look at me and tell me, you know, you're too big, lose weight. That's it. So I had all these nightmares, didn't sleep. Nothing for a solid like week. And then we went down there, we met her. I cried in her office. I just like the stress of the past, you know, I think at this point we were 3 years in everything that happened. Just that whole, no, 2 years in. Yeah. The stress of everything just kind of letting out in front of her. And for the first time, she listened to me and she listened to my family background, my family history. She listened to what I eat and what I do as exercise. And, you know, she listened. And for the first time, I felt like somebody was caring and looking beyond my BMI. Mm-hmm. So not focusing necessarily on that, right? And I remember asking her straight out. I said, do you think I can get pregnant? And she said, yes. And that's what I think. I just lost it even more. And I remember her taking out this little box where she, I guess, hides her Kleenex box. Yeah. And she took it out and she's like, there you go. I'm like, okay, thank you. And just crying so much, right? And she's actually one of the first ones that looked at my husband and said, we need to do more testing for you. So my husband, so my husband did get referred to a urologist here in our hometown because our family doctor actually referred him just to get testing done, right? Just like regular testing, I guess, an ultrasound. And the urologist here found, I don't know how to say that word, but like varicocele. It's like a, yeah. So in one of his testicles. So he said it's not much, it's not big enough to, or no, he said that we would have to operate because it could damper the sperm. So we just kind of put that off to the side and didn't really look more into it. But then So the clinic in Markham referred us to another urologist, and looking back at that, I was like, why didn't we do this like 2 years ago? You know, I guess we just put everything to the side because we're like, oh, it's my BMI. I kept, you know, I was told I have PCOS. I was told I can't be held because of my BMI. So we just kind of shrugged it off to being me, the issue as to why we can't, you know, make a child. And he went to go see this urologist, and the urologist actually prescribed him Clomid to help with his morphology and his sperm count. And he said the varicocele is actually too small, and not even if he operates, he'd be out like 3-4 months anyways. And he's like, that it wouldn't make a big enough difference on your sperm count. So like, okay, we're reassured that, you know, we made the right decision there not to have that operation. And then the Clomid seemed to work because he kept doing sperm samples and getting tested to kind of see how that worked. So it did help a little bit in his sperm count. But when you look at, you know, the average sperm count that you have compared to his, there is a significant difference. So our doctor at the Markham clinic said that, you know, we need to look into this a little bit more. And she did like DNA testing too on him, and kind of just did more test focus on him. She redid the whole sonograms on me, the whole typical blood work when you started a new clinic. And our second or appointment to review our results, I'll never forget that appointment either. We kind of just sat there and we were joking with her at our first appointment and really laughing. And I guess she kind of fed off us that, you know, we're easygoing couple and she can laugh with us and whatever. Anyways, at one point in the second meeting, she looked at my husband and she's like, I don't get to say this often, but this is your fault. And she just like straight up told him, like, this is your fault. This is not your wife's weight. She does not have PCOS. After reviewing everything, she's like, you do not have PCOS. Your weight is not an issue. You're healthy. You're young. You know, you can get pregnant. Let's do this. So we were all kind of just laughing. Like, are you serious? Like this, like we can do this now. We know what the issue is and we can go forward and, you know, try to make a baby. And she's like, yeah, let's do this. Let's start. But we had already missed the cutoff for the funded cycles that the province gives, because the province gives certain funding, right, to clinics, and they had already distributed their money for that year. So we said, listen, we've waited all these years, let's just bite the bullet and let's, you know, pay for this ourselves. So we start that treatment, we start our IVF cycle. So we did ICSI IVF to up our chances just because the sperm was compromised a bit. So she did diagnosis with male factor infertility. And so we did ICSI IVF. I remember doing the stim. So because I'm 4 hours away or 3.5, whatever hours away from my clinic, they had told me that I'd have to be available for 2 weeks for monitoring. So kind of every day monitoring. So I didn't really know what this looked like. I didn't really have anyone to talk to about it. I had a girlfriend who was going through it at another clinic, but she lived 2 seconds away from that clinic. So she was like, yeah, I just go in the morning before work and then I go to work. And I'm like, oh, okay, how am I going to make this work? This does not work. So I called the clinic in my hometown, like, hey, do you guys do the cycle monitoring? And they're like, nope, we don't. I'm like, okay, sounds good. So I ended up having to take 2 weeks off of work. I stayed a full week. I have a girlfriend who lives in Hamilton. So she let me stay with her for a week. She was actually on mat leave. So it ended up good that we were able to spend kind of a week together, right? And I would wake up at 4:30 every morning, put my alarm on, get ready, because Hamilton's still kind of far, right?
Yeah,
so I took the 407 and didn't waste any time on the highways, whatever. Didn't want to take a chance of accidents or anything like that. So thank God it was also summertime, or not summertime, but it was the fall. So I knew there was no snow, anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I would hit the road, go do my cycle monitoring, ultrasound, blood work, all that fun stuff. And wait around in town to see if I needed to buy more meds, if I needed to, you know, do anything else. I remember just parking in the Tim Hortons parking lot, waiting for them to call me. Cause I'm like, I don't want to drive all the way back there and then come back. Right. So, did that for a full 7 days, which was hectic and crazy looking back now. I'm like, how and why did I do that? And then the second week, so my parents drove my husband down to Markham, and we rented a hotel room for a week and we stayed there. And so that was kind of closer. We only had a 15-minute drive to do, and I was going every day because I was nearing my retrieval date. So that was a little bit more realistic, I guess you can say. But I think that's something that a lot of people don't talk about, is the cost that you incur, like, with travel, right? And I know that I'm not the only one in this boat. I know a lot of women have to travel for, you know, clinics and help. So we were lucky because we are in Northern Ontario. There is a grant that exists, the Northern Ontario Travel Grant. So if nobody knows about it, look into it, because it's definitely been very helpful for us to help pay. Pay like, you know, half of our hotel costs and a little bit of gas, a little bit of food. So it doesn't cover everything, but it definitely helps. Definitely helps.
So is that a program for, because you're not able to access care where you are, that you have to travel in order to get the appropriate care you need?
Exactly. Exactly. So because we have to travel, I think it's more than 80 kilometers to get medical help, we have that grant that covers it, or helps cover some of the costs.
Oh, that's so good.
Sweet. Does that include parking too?
Yeah. So you can keep your parking tickets, because we all know downtown and in Toronto area, everywhere you have to pay for parking.
It's like $20, 15 minutes. It's ridiculous.
I know. So we in our cup holders, we had all these like stacks of receipts from parking, and we have a file in our safe that everything, you know, is all parking, not parking tickets, but the parking stubs and all of our financial stuff from all those trips. Wow. So yeah, that does help. So look into that if you are in Northern Ontario. So then we had our egg retrieval date, where we went in early in the morning, had no idea what to expect. I remember before this, actually, my doctor sent me to meet the anesthesiologist. So they said that, she kind of explained to me the whole BMI situation, right? Because nobody in the past 2-3 years had explained to me why I kept getting shut down for the BMI, for my BMI. And I wasn't really finding anything online about it. So she took the time again to explain to me. So when you have to go under for the egg retrieval, there are certain laws, I guess, that they have to abide by. And if your BMI is over a certain amount, it's safer to do so if you're attached to a hospital. So the clinic I'm at actually has like a hallway that's attached to the hospital. So they consider themselves able to do procedures. So give anesthesia to someone who has a higher BMI. So she had me meet, because they say there's more issues that can occur, that a person with a higher BMI can have more issues when being put under with breathing and everything like that, right? So I think it's more of a liability thing, which I get, but if somebody would have just explained it to me, I wouldn't have gone crazy all these years, right? Thinking all these things. So to me, it makes sense. It's a fact. It's, yeah, okay, people with higher BMIs have a harder time with, you know, being put under. So I get that. Good to go. Met with the anesthesiologist. He was like, oh my God, don't worry about it. We got this. And was put under. It actually was a different doctor who did my retrieval. So we were a little sad at first, but we knew that coming into it. And we're like, okay, whatever. I was under her care. I know she supervised me. You know, she set me up for the best possible outcome. So they went, they were able to retrieve some vaginally, but they also had to retrieve some from my abdomen. They used like a little scope and a little camera to go in through your abdomen to retrieve the eggs. So I have one ovary that's really high up. So they did that on my right side. So when I came out, I actually had like two little, it's like a little vampire bit me, two little vampire marks on my bottom abdomen that healed up within like 3-4 days. It really wasn't anything big. And they give you antibiotics to take after as well, which was something I didn't really know, and which I'm happy we had, right, to avoid any kind of complication. So I got out of there with 7 eggs retrieved. And it was really exciting, but I was also obviously doing the comparison game. So a girlfriend of mine had just done her IVF, exactly, right? We know where this is going. So she retrieved, I think it was like 20 something, because she ended up with 10 embryos. So I was like, oh my God, they only got 7, you know, nothing's good. Again, here you go being negative. And I think it just, after going through everything, you just kind of automatically go that route and you don't really catch yourself because you're just used to bad news, I guess.
Yeah.
So the way one of the nurses explained it to me, she's like, think of your follicles in a Ziploc bag as marshmallows, and they're all trying to grow, right? We're trying to grow them all on your ovary, but there's the biggest ones are going to be the most dominant and take up most room. So she's like, we have the one big marshmallow that we can see, but underneath there's probably other ones that we could have grabbed, but it was probably safest to just grab the one that we could see that probably had the mature egg, right? So we ended up with 7. Out of those 7, we ended up with 3 embryos that made it to day 5. Actually, 1 made it to day 5 and 2 made it to day 6. So waiting for those phone calls from the embryologist every day was a nightmare. Yeah. Oh my God. So the first phone call that we got was when we were driving home after the egg retrieval. And I had gotten so sick from the anesthesia too the day before. So we had stayed in the hotel room for an extra night just so I could get better. And the next morning driving home, we got the phone call. We were so nervous and like, okay, you have 6 that made it. We're like, oh my God, yay. And we're celebrating on the 401 and all excited. And we're like, finally, you know, that loop in the roller coaster, that's a positive loop. We're going up. Everything's good. And then day 3, we got the other call and we're like, okay, you're down to 4. And then my heart sunk because I was like, no, like I lost 2. What's happening? And they had told us that they have about a 50% success rate with, from the ones that you take out. So 50% of those usually make it to an embryo. So by day 5, I was at work actually and got the phone call and just started crying in my office and called my husband and he started crying at work. And we were just so excited that we finally, after all these years, had 3 chances at maybe becoming parents, right? And I say maybe because now we know that just because you have an embryo doesn't mean that it can lead to a successful pregnancy, right? Which is a hard one to swallow too, I think, because you put in all this money, time and effort, and then it's like, here's your maybe. Hold on to that maybe.
And pain and side effects and all that other shit that comes along with it.
Exactly.
I don't think IVF is presented that way though.
That's right? The thing.
It seems like IVF is the easy answer for when things don't go according to plan or they don't work. It's like, oh, well, just do IVF and you'll get a baby.
Exactly. Just do IVF. Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me just pick $20,000 out of the air and pay for IVF and get babies. Like, sure. You know, if it were that easy, I feel like so many people would not be in this boat. Right. But exactly. When you're uneducated about it.
Yeah. Or even if it's like guaranteed, like this guaranteed. Okay. If it's guaranteed, sure. But it's not.
It is not. It is definitely not. And I was obviously Dr. Googling everything and, you know, what are my chances? I have three. What are those in the day five, day six embryo? What's the difference? And then going on to this whole thing. So we did do PGT testing as well. So then we had to wait another 2 weeks to get the results from that. We knew that my husband's DNA had come back just at like the borderline of good. Like, I guess it was good, but she said, we're kind of like that borderline. So we're like, okay. Mm-hmm. So we could have expected some embryos coming back as mosaic or, you know, not good, but our three embryos did come out as euploid. So we were super excited. Yay! Here we go. Yeah, exactly. Another woohoo, you know, let's do this.
You beat the odds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we honestly did. And I think that was a humbling experience for me again, because I was starting to know a bit more people going through the infertility journey and them sharing their experience with me and me kind of comparing. I'm like, wow, okay. Like this, why are we so lucky and they're not that lucky? You know, why is it chosen who can have good embryos and who can't? Like, why is that a thing? You know, why can't everybody just have good embryos? Why can't that be? And I started questioning, getting super upset and angry, and this anger just kind of like filled me. I should have been happy. I should have been, you know, excited, but I was so angry at the fact that I had to do IVF, that all my friends, well, a good number of my friends and acquaintances were doing IVF. And I'm like, why is this? Like, what is happening? You know? And I think I was stuck in that negative kind of dark place for a long time. And I only realized it once we were doing our transfer prep, that how much of this weight I was carrying of anger and upset and jealousy towards other people who would just get pregnant naturally, or, you know, pregnancy announcement after pregnancy announcement after pregnancy announcement. And you're like, whew, okay, how much more can my heart handle? You know,
I can relate. Anger is my companion.
Yeah.
Yes. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it took a lot of reflection and kind of growth on my part to move, not past that, but to have kind of closure with it all and deal with it all. Before my embryo transfer, I wanted to make sure that I was in a good mental space, right? So we did the retrieval in October. I was so excited. I'm like, okay, yeah, let's get these PGT tested embryos inside of me. Let's do this before Christmas. We can have a Christmas baby. I was putting all this stress on me. And then for the first time in, well, ever, this never happened to me. My period didn't come. So I was like, what is happening? And I think all the stress and anger and everything that was my body was going through, it was kind of a sign, like, chill the F out, like, chill out. Hold the phone. You do not need this, you know?
It's just divine intervention.
Yeah.
You need to take a break.
Yeah. It's like when you want it, it doesn't come. But then when you don't want it, here I am.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
We started, we did Christmas and we had these shirts made that said like mother of embryo and father of embryo. So we wore those t-shirts during Christmas and we took our pictures, and I'm like, if we're not going to have a baby this Christmas, let's at least celebrate that we have embryos.
Aww.
And celebrate something, right? So I still look back at those pictures like, oh, look at us, so young, cute, naive about what this is gonna bring, right? And
that's really good though, celebrate your success.
Exactly. From my handle, Live, Love, Laugh, and IVF, which is why I kind of came up with that handle, right? Because I didn't live, I didn't love, and I didn't laugh enough during the first couple of years. And I'm like, if I can help at least one person see that we need to stop and smell the roses and do do these three things at least on a regular basis, I think we can kind of get through this roller coaster, right? Mm-hmm. So then January comes, and I remember January 18th, my cycle started. So that was the day that I reported my day one to my nurse, and all the stars kind of aligned because that's a year prior. My father-in-law had passed away on January 18th. So I'm like, it's a sign. He's watching over us. January 18th, my period is here. Let's do this, you know? So my husband and I were really reading into that sign. And I think we kept looking for signs. And I think that ended up being our coping mechanism. Like a lot of people, you know, go to God or use religion or, you know, different things like that. Journaling, whatever it may be. I think our thing was really signs for this first whole transfer. Mm-hmm. So again, we had to drive down to do the monitoring because a transfer prep involves monitoring as well. Mm-hmm. So I started on estrogen patch and pills. Oh, yeah. 6 days prior to my transfer, and the progesterone and oil injections as well. So we did those, rented our hotel room, stayed there, and I did not sleep the whole night before. Did not sleep a wink at all. I think the excitement and the nerves, everything was kind of getting to me, right? And not really knowing what to expect. So we get to the clinic in the morning, and we're there bright and early, ready to tackle this. And it ended up being our doctor doing the transfer. So that was very reassuring as well, even though I know they're all qualified and whatever. It's just nice that, you know, you have that personal bond, I guess, because mm-hmm. they do kind of get to know you, right? They get to know a lot of you, whether they like it or not, they get to know you. You make sure they get to know you. So we did our transfer and everything went great. Slept in Markham that night as well. We didn't want to drive back. And I did end up taking time off work to just kind of rest. And I said, if I'm going to make this work, this is going to work. We're going to make this work. So took time off work. I ended up, so the Pier 1 in our hometown was closing and there was these great sales happening, right? So I'm like, I need to buy all sorts of furniture. And I obviously wanted to redecorate my house. And I'm like, let's do this, this, this. So I ended up buying so much furniture. And then I decided to place it all. So I was moving couches and, you know, I wasn't realizing what I just went through. And like, my husband's like, stop moving things, stop touching them. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm okay. I feel good. Da, da, da. But I didn't really know, you know, there's no symptoms. That's the thing, right? With an embryo transfer, there's no symptoms. You have nothing except what the medication gives you. So, mm-hmm. okay. A little bit of cramping, whatever it may be, your symptoms are. So the next morning after moving all that furniture, I was spotting. So then I immediately went in a dark hole and, you know, beat myself up. I shouldn't have moved that furniture. I shouldn't have done this. Shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't. And then I'm like, my period's here. That's it. It didn't work. So I had blood work scheduled that morning. So I went for my blood work, had my spotting, whatever. The next morning, I'm like, okay, I'm going back to school. Oh no, that was a Friday. I had my blood work. I didn't get my results till the Monday morning of my blood work. So I'm like, oh, my cousin was going to work. And she's like, do you want me to pick you up a coffee on the way? And I'm like, oh, I guess you can. I'm not pregnant, whatever. I got my results. I screenshotted the results on my phone and I sent it to her. I'm like, see, I'm not pregnant. And when you get results back from Life Labs, so I didn't go to Toronto to do blood work. I did it here at Life Labs so I wouldn't have to travel again just for blood work. There's like this ladder, right, that comes up of like not pregnant, or if you're pregnant, you're from zero to whatever for your HCG. Mm-hmm. So I just read like not pregnant. That's it. We're done. I didn't pay attention to anything else. I saw the ladder. I'm like, it's a big zero. I'm not pregnant. That's it. And she sent it back to me with a big circle around a number. And I'm like, well, what is this? She's like, well, that means you're pregnant. I'm like, no, I'm not pregnant. Like, I'm bleeding. Like, I'm not pregnant. So I just didn't believe her at all. She's like, well, I'm not going to get you a coffee. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. So I called the clinic, and they have me go for more blood work in 2 days. So when you do an embryo transfer, you go for blood work twice to make sure that the numbers are rising or doubling within a 48-hour period. Mm-hmm. So I went back 48 hours later, and sure enough, the numbers had risen. So I was like, okay, well, what does this mean? I was still spotting. So that was, you know,
you're
really
in total weird denial.
Oh yeah. Total. I wasn't like, there was no way in my mind that this had worked. No way in my mind. So I was like, okay, what does this mean? So I called my nurse. I'm like, hey, so I'm bleeding. She's like, okay, well, let's get you to have an ultrasound. So booked an ultrasound. I think I was like 5 weeks and a half or something at that point for the ultrasound. The girl doing the tech doing my ultrasound is like, well, why are you here? She's like, I can't see much, you know. I'm like, oh no, don't worry. I'm like, I don't know why I'm here. I'm bleeding. Just check things out, send it to them, and they'll see I'm not pregnant, and then that's okay. And she's like, okay. And she was kind of looking at me weird during the ultrasound. I'm like, what? Why are you looking at me weird for? And
oh my gosh, I still don't know, yes or no. So I'm intrigued. Keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's we have to keep in mind, right? This is like 4 years now of, you know, negative and no, all these negative tests coming up. So I'm like, there's no way in hell that I'm pregnant. Like, no way.
And like we put so much walls up that we don't know how to receive the positive.
Yeah.
You said it. There it is. Right? Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. That's exactly, I couldn't have said it any better. That's exactly it. So I sent that out, and my nurse sends me back an email, and there's this, like, you know, those birds in movies that carry children and deliver children on doorsteps there.
The
those birds with the, yes. Yeah. So in her email, there was a picture of that with a little baby wrapped up. And she's like, yeah, it looks like there is something growing and da da da. I don't remember what the thing, the email said, but all I remember seeing is that picture. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what? I emailed her, are you saying I'm pregnant?
Like, spell it out. Come
she's
on.
Like, it's still really early, but so far so good. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. So my cousin was working at my school at that point. So I, on lunch break, I messaged her. I'm like, come see me. So she comes in and I'm crying. She's like, oh my God. And we're celebrating in the office. I hadn't even told my husband. Like, I was in so much shock. I'm like, what is happening right now? So then I'm like shaking. She's like, call Mark. I'm like, okay. So I call him, and ended up that being the case that I was pregnant. So 2 weeks after that, at 7 weeks, we had another ultrasound and everything looked good. The heartbeat was good. But again, you know, you're still early. You're not at that 12 week safe zone, I guess people call it. Mm-hmm. But we had told our close family and friends, and we were super honest with the journey. And I think that's one of the things, if I were to do this over again, I think I would have been open and honest with everyone from day one about this, because it's a lot less isolating and it's a lot less hard. I think it's just not as hard for me personally, being able to open up and have my family be aware of this, have my staff be aware of this. Like, just the support I got from them is just unreal. And the feedback I got, you know, it's crazy what happens when you do let those walls down and you kind of let people in and see your success and celebrate with you. And yeah, I think that was something that I'm happy that I did. So we had more ultrasounds, and everything turned out good, led to a healthy pregnancy, to our first IVF baby. So we have our first little IVF boy, who's now, 10 and a half months. So big personality, big boy, big guy, the whole shebang. So we are super grateful, like super, super grateful for even being in this position, because I know so many women out there and couples who are like, knife in the heart, oh God, you know, another successful pregnancy or another successful IVF story. And I can't even begin to describe how I know how they're feeling. And it's hard, right? It's hard to see other people succeed, and there's jealousy, and there's, so I kind of put myself in those women's shoes, and I knew who my audience was, and I knew who I could speak to about this and who I should probably watch how I word things. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a good move on my part in a sense, because I put myself in their shoes, like I said, and I thought about how I would want to be approached about this, because I've had people approach me and be like, oh, I'm pregnant, it worked, or, you know, this and that. So that was that. Gave birth, that's in October of 2020. And as soon as I gave birth, I was like, not doing this again. And then 3 weeks later, I'm like, when can I sign up to do the next transfer? Okay, women do this. Like, I don't know how, women are just like, women are just the freaking bomb. Okay. Like our bodies from going from infertility to possibly being able to create to get, like, it's just wild what our bodies do. And I think I didn't give enough credit to my body over the years because of all the feedback I got of, oh, your BMI is too high, your BMI, you know, lose a little bit of weight, whatever. I didn't value my body in a positive way. And after doing that, and after doing the transfer and being like, yeah, I carried, like, screw you, all you doctors that told me I couldn't, you know, screw you, society, for telling me, you know? And I was like, I did this, like, good for me, you know? And I was ready to do it again. I'm like, let's see if I can do this again. But after giving birth, I was having these really bad pains on my right side, and turned out that I had gallbladder attacks. I don't know if anyone here, if you ladies ever gone through this. Mm-mm. Okay, I'd rather give birth than do this. Okay, like gallbladder. No, like this is like, I pity. Apparently kidney stones is even worse than this. Oh, so if gosh. Anyone who's gone through kidney stones, my hat's off to you. So the pain that you feel is just unreal. And the pandemic was full force, right? It had already been a year. I was pregnant throughout the whole pandemic, gave birth in the pandemic. And now my gallbladder is acting up in this pandemic. And it was during a time where the cases were super high and they were canceling, you know, surgeries and stuff. But I told the doctor, I said, I want to get pregnant again. So I want to do another embryo transfer, get this thing out of me. So he did put me on an emergency list, and he's like, do not get pregnant with your gallbladder. Like, this is not good. Do not do that. So ended up getting the gallbladder surgery. Did that when my son was, I think, 4 months. Oh, wasn't able to hold him for a full week. That was really hard. Not being able to kind of move or anything like that for a full week. Wow. And then I'm like, okay, let's call our doctor and set up a transfer date and let's do this, you know? And I got a lot of people being like, well, shouldn't you give your body a year before trying again? So I know this is one thing that a lot of women who've either had miscarriages or who have had pregnancies are told, right? So let your body rest. Let your body rest is a big thing. And I think we know, like, we're in our own body, so we know when we need the rest and we know when we can keep going. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to keep going. So
you're like, I'm on a good roll now.
Yeah. But part of me was afraid, right? Because of all the traumatic events that happened within all this. Like, there's so many things that I've left out, but there's so many little things that have happened throughout the journey. And the trauma is real, right? People say PTSD and infertility are hand in hand. I'm like, yes, they are. Yep. They really are.
Oh my God. Yes.
100%.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 7 years, you know, right. It's yeah. The trauma is there. So, I was a little bit more aware of what my triggers were. I could feel the stress coming on, right. Of this happened before, this went bad, this went good. So backpedaling a little bit here, when our husband and I got married, we went on a honeymoon to, Vegas. So we went to Vegas, we were having a good time. Our first night there, went great. The second night, we went to go see a Cirque du Soleil show, got out of that, started gambling in the casino. And then all of a sudden we see people like running and we're like, why are these people running? And then we hear what sounds like a gunshot. So we're like, okay, what is happening? So I don't know if you ladies remember the guy who went on a rampage at the country concert, which I wanted to go to, but the only reason we didn't go was because of we had already had the Sub-Sede tickets and they didn't let us switch. The only night they had available for us to switch the Sub-Sede tickets, we had already booked Celine Dion. So we couldn't switch that, which thank God in a sense, right? Because I would have been at that concert, but instead we were in a hotel nearby. Anyway, so just chaos and everywhere.
Yeah, me too.
So the expression like running for your life, that's pretty much it, running for your life. And I remember those feelings in those moments, and I did a lot of therapy with the psychologist who specializes in PTSD, and he really made me aware of, you know, what my body goes through when I'm thinking of these events and things like that. And I was able to take what I learned from him during that situation into my fertility situation. So I know, you know, my hands get clammy when I get, when I think about all this infertility stuff, my face gets red. I start to stutter a little bit, things like that. He made me realize. So now I know when I get to those symptoms, I guess, to just kind of take a step back and be like, okay, you need to calm down. And I wasn't getting these symptoms when I wanted to go for my second embryo transfer. I'm like, I'm good, let's do this, you know? We went to, we had a virtual appointment with her, and she said, like, you don't need to let your body rest. You had a, your birth went great and you had no complications from that. You didn't have a C-section. She's like, you can go through with this. You can proceed. We're like, oh my God, another positive. Let's do this. Oh my God, this is too easy. This is too easy. And I kept remember telling my husband, this is too easy. There's something like, why is this so easy for us? Right? Like comparing myself to other people. And in this time is when I started to join the Instagram fertility community, where I was seeing all sorts of stories from around the world of different women going through different things. And I'm comparing myself to them and I'm saying, you know, this is too easy. But lo and behold, we did the transfer prep. It was a little bit different this time because we did have our son. So just the whole like traveling and, you know, being available for cycle monitoring, all that kind of added a little bit of an extra hurdle, but we ended up figuring it out and did our transfer and same protocol, same everything. Different doctor did the transfer and he was great and everything went well. Same symptoms. I started to get some cramping. I was like, oh, okay. But this time we wanted to test. So I tested early. I did not wait till HCG blood work to be done, till beta day to do it. So I remember 7 days post-transfer doing a pregnancy test and just leaving it on the counter while my husband was giving my son a bath, and the line wasn't showing up. And I was like, oh my God, there's no line. There's no line. So I just left. I went to the bathroom with him and I was just like, okay, let's just do this and whatever. He's like, well, what is it? Is there a line? Is there a line? I'm like, no, no, it's okay. Let's just ignore it. It's too early, whatever. So after a couple of minutes after that, get him out of the bath, everything, we go back into our bathroom to check the test. And sure enough, there was this like faintest, like squinting, like, you know, the squinters.
The light test.
It's the light test that does it for me. When I hold it up to the light and it's not there, that's when I know it's a no-go. But there was something there. So I was like, oh shit. Okay, here we go again. I guess this is good. We're excited. So my parents actually live in an in-law suite with us. So I run downstairs to their apartment. I'm like, oh my God, guys, look, we're pregnant again. Start celebrating and just getting way ahead of myself. Right. And I'm like, you know, hold on, way too easy. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't do this. And go for a first, ultrasound at 7 weeks. And she's like, yeah, well, obviously the ultrasound tech couldn't say anything, but she's like, it looks like you're measuring, you know, 7 weeks, 3 days. I'm like, oh, perfect. You know, it's there. Everything's good. Heartbeat was there. And I was so exhausted. I was exhausted. I was nauseous. I was completely different from my first. And they say that that happens where like different pregnancies, right? But I was cold all the time. I had migraines all the time. My to the point where my husband even reached out to our doctor and was like, these are the symptoms my wife's having. Is she okay? And my doctor even called me. She's like, your husband reached out to me. Like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I just, you know, feel super exhausted and cold. I don't know. Anyway, she said, if you have any pain, you know, go to the doctors. And she was thinking maybe ectopic or whatever, but I didn't have any of that. It was just exhaustion. And I remember a couple of days after my first ultrasound being like, oh yeah, like, I think I can start exercising again. Like, I think I could like go for a walk. I'm not as tired. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting out of the first trimester soon. Like, I'm approaching my 12 weeks. This is so great. You know, I'm going to be 8 weeks or 9 weeks soon. And kind of just being excited to get over the hump of the exhaustion. And I had a 9 week ultrasound scheduled, and I was telling myself, like, something's weird, like something's off. I have all this energy. What's happening? I go for the ultrasound, and it was a student doing it. And she's like, is it okay if blah, 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 you know, they come check out after? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. Sure. And they were taking a long time, you know, asking me to like hold my breath, do different things. And I'm like, something's off, like something feels completely off. And I ended up having a girl's night planned that night for dinner. So I was like, okay, you know what? I called my husband after the ultrasound. I'm like, I don't know, something's weird. I guess we'll see by the results and go from there. And I got home that night and just in a weird mood, just in a weird, weird mood. And we were just watching TV in bed. And then my husband's like, oh, the email's here. So we get an email from Life Labs when you do an ultrasound where you can access your own information and you can go see your ultrasound reports or blood work, whatever. I'm like, oh, that was quick. Like, I wasn't expecting it that quickly. And I'm like, give me the phone. I'm doing it, because I didn't want him to see or read anything bad. Right. Cause I'm like, I think I know. And then there it was just in front of us, cardiac activity absent in red. And we were just, he just started crying and I was just like, what? No, what? And I was in denial and both of us just kind of letting it all out and crying and grieving. And I just remember saying like, I don't want to go through this. I don't want to go through this. I don't want to lose this. I cannot go through this physically. Like, I had heard about women miscarrying and had friends, you know, talk to me about their experiences and how traumatic it is. And I was like, no, like, I cannot do this. And we just kind of held each other and just stayed there for a good hour, just, you know, crying and holding each other. And then the next morning, my family doctor called us because he got CC'd, I guess, on the report as well. And he, his tone of voice, obviously, just, we just needed a doctor to kind of confirm it to us. And we knew what he was telling us. And he said that, you know, there was no cardiac activity and that I had miscarried. So that was a whole new, I think, loop of the roller coaster for me, a whole new hurdle to pass. Just finding out what my body would go through, just kind of having to lose this pregnancy. And I shared on my Instagram page what we were going through, and I've had so many women reach out to me, so many, way too many to be good. You know, like, it's not a good thing when that many women come to you and tell you they've gone through that, in the sense that it shouldn't be happening, but it is, you know?
Yeah.
And just women opening up about their stories. And I posted about it on our personal Facebook page and whatever. And again, so many women who I've gone to high school with, who I haven't talked to in years, message me saying, I went through this, this, this. And you're like, holy shit, like, this happens way too often. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I was finding, the question I was getting a lot was, how far along were you? And in my head, I'm like, well, what does it matter? Like, yeah, it was 9 weeks and that's pretty far along, but what does it matter if I would have been 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? You know, a loss is a loss. Like, why are we putting so much attention on how far along a person was when they lose? Mm-hmm. And my doctor said, I kind of asked her that, and it's because the procedures to get rid of the, I guess, I don't know if fetus is the right word, or the baby at this point, are different, right? The further along you are, the different kind of methods that need to be used. Mm-hmm. So my body could have, she said I could have tried to lose it naturally, but because I was on all this progesterone and estrogen, my body was still thinking that it was pregnant, but it wasn't realizing that there was no longer a heartbeat. So my body kept me pregnant for almost 4 weeks after finding out that I was pregnant, that I, miscarried.
Wow.
Yeah. With all the medication and all the hormone changes, my body's like, no, what's happening? You're pregnant, you know, but none of the symptoms are there or whatever. So she said, because I was that far along, I should probably do the medication route. So you just, I don't know how graphic I can get here, but you can choose to, so you have to put the medication up your vagina twice a day for the first time. So I think I had 4 to take. So I had 8 to take in all, 4 at a time each time. And this amazing warrior on the Instagram, on my Instagram account, reached out to me and she's like, listen, do you want to hear how it's going to happen? Or do you want me to sugarcoat things? I'm like, oh my God, like, tell me how it is. You know, mm-hmm. I'm a kind of person that likes to know ahead of time. What am I going to expect? What is my body going to go through? Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of my biggest fears, was not knowing what was about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And she laid it all out. This is what you can expect. This is what's going to happen. This is the bleeding. This is that. Okay, good. I had a pretty good idea of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So then the cramping started and my husband was so amazing. He just let me sit here where I am now, actually in our bedroom. And he's like, just lay there and just do what you got to do. He's like, I'm going to take care of our son. I got this. I'm like, okay, wow. Like even that, like that made me tear up even more. I'm like, I don't deserve you being so nice to me. Why? All these things, right? Your hormones are shifting. You're grieving. I forgot too that he was grieving in a sense, right? He was so strong for me for 5 weeks without showing kind of anything on his side after the first night. And he let me kind of grieve and heal and go through everything. And then he had his turn where he's like, listen, I'm not okay. I need to grieve this too. I'm like, oh my God, do it. Stay in bed. You know, I'll take care of our child now and let's do this, right? It was an interesting 5 weeks. So it took my body 4 full weeks to get rid of the baby. I went to emerge one time because I was bleeding so much and I was bleeding. This was like 10 days after taking the medication. I thought it was like, you take the medication, that's it, you're done.
Yeah.
But no such thing. So I ended up going to the emerge. I was bleeding everywhere. Like it was just awful. And what's weird to me is that they have a room right in the emerge dedicated to pregnant women or women who are pregnant who might, you know, need to be checked on or whatever. So we waited in there and they took my blood work and the doctor was like, it doesn't look like you passed it yet because your HCG was still, my HCG was still really high. So he said, go home and rest and, you know, take your time and just be alone. And this was throughout the summer. So thank God I didn't have to work when this was happening because I cannot. I've had so many people tell me, you know, I miscarried while at work, or I'm like, how did you do that? Like, I don't know. So,
reminding for you.
Yeah, honestly. So I lost the baby and I compare it to giving birth. Like you give birth to the baby, right? It just kind of falls out. And after that, you feel a lot better and not as crampy or whatever. You feel kind of like yourself again. It's a weird thing to explain, but after that I was able to kind of start healing a little bit more, and I had 2 weeks of my holidays still left to kind of enjoy and relax. And so we ended up, you know, taking our time and going to camp and enjoying the lake and enjoying the water and just being as a family of three, and, you know, putting that hope and dream of being a family of four kind of aside. And we were like, okay, we need to buy a new car. Oh, no, we don't need to buy a new car. Or just things like that, right? That come out and you're like, oh shit, okay, don't need to do this or don't need to do that. I think that was probably the hardest, was the hopes and dreams that we had made up for ourselves after finding out that we could have another. Mm-hmm. So here we are now. I've healed physically for sure. I've had my first cycle since the miscarriage. And I think in hindsight, when I was saying, you know, this is too easy. It's like, I knew something had to happen. Like this had to happen to kind of put things into perspective again, like not saying this should have happened to me, but it happened not for a reason, but it happened because it happened and it needed to happen. This is a lesson that I'm going to learn from and grow with, and makes me stronger as a person and as a woman. And I think anyone who goes through anything traumatic or, you know, grieves as much as the loss of a child, you're just kind of take on these new strengths that you didn't know you had, right? And even just talking with you guys about this and not crying for the first time, you know, is something interesting and foreign. Mm-hmm. But I did it.
You did.
Yeah,
You did, but I didn't. I was getting tears.
I seen that. I'm like, no, I can't look at her. Look away. I'm trying to hold them back. It's made me a lot more of an emotional person. I think I was always very much of a very strong person. People come to my office crying about situations that happened in their personal life, and I'd be like, it's okay, I got this, here's a box of tissue, I'll organize your life, don't worry about it. But now I'm like, I told my staff, I'm like, if you guys come into my office crying now, I cannot guarantee that I will not cry with you now. You know, all these things I've gone through, they just make you that much more of a human, I guess. Like, I don't know. That's a thing.
It makes you stronger. And sometimes I think we don't realize how strong we are until you have to be.
Yes.
You have no choice.
Yes.
Unfortunately, with some of the things that we've all been through, and you don't realize how strong you are until you have to be.
That's exactly it, right? And we don't want to be. We didn't ask for this, you know? We don't want it, but if I have to do it, I can either go into the negative, you know, I don't want this, woe is me life, or I can be like, okay, no, this is the hand I've been dealt, let's deal with it and let's go with it. And I have made a post about that, where it's like, how much of a victim am I going to play? You know, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, I shouldn't have to go through this. And yeah, there are days where I'm like, screw you can get pregnant by yourself. Mm-hmm. But then there are days where I'm like, you know what? I got this. I went through this. Look at everything I've overcame. Mm-hmm. And here I am now. And I'm coming for you, baby number two, mm-hmm. right? Like, or three, actually, in my case. But that's choosing how we're honoring this pregnancy has been, you know, a huge talk too, is it is a baby, you know, and mm-hmm. we chose not to name it, and we chose not to know the gender. Not that we could know the gender, but we chose not to have any of that information, just because I think it would have made it harder for us personally mm-hmm. in our own experience. I know a lot of women like to know the gender, like to know, you know, name the baby, stuff like that, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. It gives closure to so many people, but I think I needed to, maybe not yet, right? Maybe later on I'm going to do that, but right now I'm not there yet. So
mm-hmm. you need to do what feels right for you.
It's
so unfortunate too, like as if you're not already suffering enough.
Yeah.
But for the loss to take so long.
I know. And I had
for your body
to get rid of it. That. Like how, why did it take this long? And the girl that had given me all the stats, you know, she's like, her, it lasts like 48 hours and it was done. I'm like, why is it taking my body so long? And that's why I went to Emerge. Mm-hmm. Cause I was like, this is not normal. Like, what's happening, you know? And I think all the medication I was on, my body was like, let's hold on to this. Let's keep this going. I want this for you. But we just chalk it up to this baby. You know, we had our embryos PGT tested, so we know that all the chromosomes were there, but it doesn't test for heart defects. It doesn't test for all of the other things that could possibly go wrong mm-hmm. with a pregnancy, right? Mm-hmm. And you blame yourself right away. It's my fault. And that's the one thing my doctor told me right away. She said, it's not your fault. And that was a hard pill to swallow for me, to try to accept that it wasn't my fault. You know, I shouldn't have eaten the prosciutto, you know, the cold cut meat. I shouldn't have had that prosciutto sandwich. I shouldn't have gone to swim in the lake at camp. I shouldn't have, you know, there's so many things that I was beating myself up about. At this point, it is what it is. I need to move forward and, you know, acknowledge that my body went through what it went through, and, hope that it doesn't happen again, because that's when I talk to women who have had recurring miscarriages, I'm like, they're the strongest of the strongest humans I know, because it's unreal, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now we spoke to our fertility nurse about our next steps. So here I am again, you know, like, let's go, let's do this again. I want another baby. Let's do this. And I'm like, am I being greedy, like going for this? Like, so many women in the infertility world are like, shut up, you have a baby, lady. Like, no, you know, let the rest of us have one. So I was like, maybe I should just stop and like spend so much time with my son. And like, I love my son. It's not even that. It's just, I want, you know, I want what everybody else wants. I want to grow my family. I want to keep going. And just because I've had a baby, I've come to realize that I shouldn't guilt myself for that. And I'm still an infertility warrior. I still went through it all. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a child, and yes, I love him so much, but just because I had a child doesn't mean I can easily, you know, get pregnant again. And this experience just taught me that.
Mm-hmm. Just because you have one child doesn't mean you're done.
Yeah, that too, right?
Just because we're successful once, it doesn't mean that the journey is over for us. Oh, it worked. Okay, bye. We're done.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
No, yeah.
And a lot of people thought that, oh, well, it worked for you once, so it's going to work this time. So I was like, oh, you're right. Okay, maybe it did work. I'm pregnant. Oh, here I am, 7 weeks. Oh, okay. But then it didn't work. So I was like, okay, no, that's not the case. Just because it worked the first time does not mean it's going to work the second time, right? So now we have our third day six embryo that's just on ice waiting for us at the clinic. Chilling, literally. we actually have an appointment tomorrow. First day of school, hustle and bustle of everything. I'm going to take a break to speak to her about our next steps. And, you know, what I was telling my husband is that we have to choose right now if we want more than two kids, because if we want more than two kids for sure, then we need to do a whole other IVF round, right? We can't just, unless this one last one splits into two, right? But the odds of that are super slim. Mm-hmm. But I've always wanted four kids. I've always wanted a huge family. So now where are we? Do we just do another, you know, IVF round? Do we transfer this guy and see what this happens? Well, I say guy, but this embryo, and see if it takes. But then let's say like this one takes, then I give birth again in another year, I'll be 34. I'm getting closer to my 35. My eggs are aging. You know, my brain is just spiraling, has been spiraling these past couple weeks. And I've had a couple of friends message me like, are you okay? Like, you seem really off lately. And I'm like, yeah, I can't. Like, I'm trying to decide how many kids I want. I'm trying to decide what I need to do in life and run a school and do this and have a baby and be with my baby at home. Like, there's just so much going on. And I had to take a step back this weekend and just kind of process it all, right?
Yeah. On top of all that, there's COVID.
small detail. Yeah. Small detail.
It really affects your personal and professional life.
Right? Very small detail. How could I miss that one? So I'm excited to see what she's going to say. And we would really, you know, hope that we can get the funded cycle as well, just to kind of help with the whole financial burden of everything.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Yeah, so when you get pregnant, you kind of get stopped on the list, right? And other people kind of bump you on top. But because this ended up in a miscarriage, it kind of, I stay
back on the list.
Yeah, pretty much, right? I'm back on the old list. And because we've been on
back
this
in list, the gang.
Yeah, and because I've been on this list for so many years, I'm pretty high up. So I'm hoping, well, I think so. So I'm really hoping that they're like, okay, you know, we have this spot allotted to you. You can do this. But like, do they want me to do it now? Do I have to take more time off work? Do I have to, you know, there's all these, now I have a baby. Do I bring him with me for 2 weeks in Markham? Like, what do I do? You know, there's all these logistics that I need to figure out. My husband is on paternity leave, so we have that flexibility where he can stay. Nice. He wanted that experience, and I want him to have that experience as well, too, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's where we're at. We're going to get answers tomorrow. I'm so excited. I'm probably not going to sleep tonight because that's all I've been thinking about, honestly. Like, if I can just get these answers, I can move on and be like, okay, I have a plan. This is what we're going to do, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can get the funded, let's go. Let's do this now. If not, I guess we would transfer our third one and see where that brings us and hope for the better, because we just can't, you know, afford another whole IVF cycle of 20 some thousand dollars. It's just not, those who do it, good for you, but we can't do that. And we're just gonna kind of go with the flow and see where it brings us in the next couple of years, but really hoping that we're going to be able to get that funded cycle going.
Yeah. And see. That would be great for you.
That helps. So that's my rambling about our IVF journey. I've let out a lot of details, but I mean, I think the gist of it is there. Right. And I know we were talking earlier about how this community on Instagram has been super therapeutic. And I think I've kind of taken my page as like a diary, right? Of being able to share my thoughts and having all these women kind of validate that and sharing their similar experiences have been super, super, I don't know, enlightening. And it's nice. It's really nice. And my husband's always like, are you doing a post? Are you going to post? What are you doing? Are you talking to your IVF friends? And it's a whole new thing now. Right. And he's like, okay, where's this one at? Where is she now? Okay. No. Where's this one? He's like trying to keep tabs of where all my IVF friends are. I'm like, oh, that's really funny. Yeah.
I encourage everyone that I talk to, which is not that many people, about infertility, but so far in the last couple of months, anyone that I've talked to about this, like, I encourage them to go on Instagram and find
100%. Like,
do it anonymously, create your own little account. You don't need to put your face on it. And then like jump in, because there's so many people, there's a whole world of support there
and Canadian support, right? Is what I'm finding. So like we were saying earlier, and the whole reason for your podcast to be here, like there was so much American, Australian, UK presence I found at first, but then I'm like, there's got to be some Canadian ladies here. Like, come on, I'm not the only Canadian going through this. Exactly. And it's been so nice connecting with women in Ontario and in Canada, all over the country, some whose provinces don't have funding for, you know, fertility, and others who do have the funding. And it's just so nice to touch base with these women, right? Mm-hmm. And create these bonds. And I've given my number to some of these women. We've faced chatted, like, you know, there's just these relationships that are forming in the, you know, we call it the worst club ever with the best members. And it's the worst club that we can possibly ever be in, but it's got the best freaking people, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it's like you're instantly BFFs. Like, what, you're going through it? Yeah, me too. Yeah, you want a bracelet? Like, it's like,
and nobody says stupid shit. Like, nobody will tell you, like, just adopt, or nobody will tell you just do this, or no, you know what I mean? Like, people live it, they understand it, and they're like, okay, you're at adoption, that's so cool, good for you. Yeah. Tell me more about adoption. You know, it's more of a support than a criticism or a like empty comment.
Yeah,
totally.
Well, you can't have your own kids, just adopt.
Yeah.
Right. Or just have someone to carry it for you, or just, you know, like, sure, you've all heard it. It's crazy, the comments that come out of people's mouths. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We just smile and nod and move forward in life, and attack what we can and keep smiling, because we all deserve to be mothers. We're just all freaking rock stars. Bottom line, we're all rock stars, not tooting my own horn, but we all rock and we're badass and we got this. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. We all have the same goal in mind. Whatever our walks of life are, whatever our troubles are, you know, our journeys are all different and we're all in different stages, but we all have the same goal in mind, and everybody's so supportive of each other, you know, no matter who you are, and so accepting of, you know, even some of the Instagram feeds that you watch, they're so raw, and what you're talking about is so heavy and resonates so well that you're sitting there bawling your eyes out at the same time, because you truly feel for that person on a different level than anyone else outside of our bubble.
Exactly.
Ever truly understand. Right.
Exactly.
Like, even for us, just, we had originally started out like, want to get the Canadian awareness out there, which we still are, because we always are talking about our experiences within Canada. And we're like, how can we not open this up to the women of the world? Because there's so many,
awesome.
There's so many, and it's like, okay, well, let's bounce off the differences between the, you know, America and Australia and the UK and Canada. And let's kind of see what our differences are, and what our experiences.
The clinics should totally like talk about you guys, like in their, you know, like they should be like on their paperwork, you must join this podcast. You know, like, why not inform yourself? And that's one of the mistakes I think we did at the beginning, was I put all our eggs in one basket, literally, in our first clinic. And, you know, I was invested in them. I'm like, they're going to do this. And we stuck around for 2 years when I lost 2 years, basically, yeah. Bottom line, right? Like, be your own advocate, do your research and ask questions. Like, mm-hmm. They're a doctor. Yeah. Just ask them questions. They're not going to bite. And if they do, jump ship, you know?
Like, yeah. I think that when you're going into it fresh, though, you're naive. You expect that your care team has your best interest in mind, and they're going to make this work for you.
Yep.
You're That's so not right. until you're a little bit seasoned and a little bit broken, you know what I mean? Because you've had your sort of setbacks.
Yeah.
And it's not until you start to become a little bit more jaded and like, hey, wait a second.
Mm-hmm. This is not right.
This doesn't feel right anymore. Like I'm losing my faith in you because of whatever the reason may be. But mm-hmm. I think we go into it not really knowing. So hopefully, hopefully us talking about our stories and even like the community, mm-hmm. you keep advocating for yourself right from, hi, nice to meet you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Right from the beginning, mm-hmm. advocate for yourself.
I think so. I really appreciate you guys letting me talk about this and it's just so nice to talk to other people and, you know, get the word out there. And if I can just even touch one person who's in the similar boat, right? Especially with BMI and whatever.
Yeah.
Just don't stop.
You've touched me today. Like, I felt like I was on the roller coaster with you.
Me too.
At some point I was so angry. Like when you step into the office and they're already judging you on your appearance and they're like, I just want to slap them. Like, right. Punch them for you. And then like you're telling me about the other like down that you had about, you know, that, you know, the big one with like your second transfer, like my heart just breaks. And just like you and your husband, and like I get all the feels and I'm getting emotional now. It's not even my story.
That's so funny.
But no, you give us hope. Like when I heard your story, it gives me hope. And also, you're a strong woman and you need to, and people need to hear your story and feel empowered too, because I do.
Thank you. And that's what I hope people do, right? Just empower yourself and ask the questions. Mm-hmm. Don't let your physical image determine, or what people see your physical image as, determine your possibilities of building a family, right? Like, I did it. I'm overweight. I got this. Let's keep going, you know? Yeah. Not saying that, you know, I promote being overweight or anything, but, you know, we all come in different body sizes. It just is what it is. And no, I don't eat McDonald's every day and ice cream every day and all that, right? As some people have told me that they think I do. And it's just that one person, it took that one doctor to listen to me, and she has changed her life forever. And I can never repay her just for that moment that she took with us.
Mm-hmm. That you were heard.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were heard. And that was the game changer in everything.
I think too, the other huge takeaway from like this episode is loving your body that you were given, mm-hmm. loving yourself. And mm-hmm. even when you were talking, I was thinking the same thing of myself. And I was walking through your story, thinking of like comparing with my own fight with my body over the years. Mm-hmm. Because hormones make you not only crazy, but they change your body. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have spent so many years sabotaging myself and not loving my body. And because, you know, it's not doing what I want it to do.
Exactly.
I'm hating it for it. And it's that's not helping the situation at all.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it takes two to tango, right? So there's not just the woman. And that's the one thing that a lot of people have a misconception about, is that, oh, the woman can't get pregnant, she must be broken, mm-hmm. right? It's not, well, hey, there's a man there with a penis and testicles and he has sperm. Yeah, so if that's not working, sometimes they don't have sperm, you know? Take 5 minutes and do a test on him to figure that out, because... Yeah. A lot of times I think that'll come up as the issue, and men being, you know, seen as the strong whatever people, don't really talk about that, or a lot of men don't want to be tested or don't mm-hmm. aren't comfortable with that, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm so fortunate to have a partner who's like amazing in all the senses, and he's like, do what you gotta do. He's like open me up if you could. He's like, take what you need, figure it out, like, let's get this figured out. Yeah
absolutely. Yeah, well, Noelle, a huge thank you.
Yes,
for being you guys on our podcast today and sharing your roller coaster of an experience. Mm-hmm. We certainly enjoyed the ride. Your positivity in these challenging times, you know, just totally shines through, and it's truly going to make a difference. It mm-hmm. really is.
Good.
So
good.
Again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Remember, in any project, including the baby project, you must take things one step at a time.
Got a question for us? Or perhaps you would like to share your story and be a guest on our podcast? Feel free to connect with us by emailing us at thebabyproject_@outlook.com or DM us on Instagram @thebabyproject_. Thanks for listening.